Hello and welcome to this edition of KMUD's Public Affairs. I'm your host, Lauren Schmidt. Local nonprofit HOPI, Humboldt Asians and Pacific Islanders in Solidarity, held their third annual Obon Festival in Arcata last weekend. Obon is a traditional Japanese Buddhist festival that honors the spirits of ancestors. Celebrated annually, usually in mid-August, Obon involves rituals such as visiting graves, lighting lanterns, and performing dances known as Bon Adori. The festival is a time for families to come together, reflect on their heritage, and pay respects to those who have passed away. It's one of Japan's most significant cultural events, blending spirituality with community celebration. This year, Humboldt Obon included Reverend Rinban Sakamoto from the San Jose Buddhist Church, who joined HOPI to bless their festival and share the stories and traditions of Obon. Attendees enjoy dancing, taiko drumming, Asian and Pacific Islander cuisine, art, children activities, and more. In addition to holding this annual celebration, HOPI has also been working on different projects throughout the community, including spearheading the Eureka Chinatown Project, which honors the history and culture of the first Chinese people in Humboldt County. HOPI has been working with the city of Eureka to create public art installations that celebrate the history and culture of the historic Chinese community in Humboldt, while raising awareness of the local expulsion events and the federal and state exclusionary acts that shaped our society today. HOPI continues to build and empower our community by amplifying diverse voices and perspectives for a more engaged and inclusive future. And last Sunday, they invited KMUD to join their Obon celebration, and we have the honor of sharing the highlights on tonight's Public Affairs.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marilyn Pike Nicely, and on behalf of HOPI and our wonderful Obon team, I welcome you to the third annual Humboldt Obon Festival. So this has been so wonderful to see happen. Thank you for being here. I'd like to acknowledge that we are on ancestral Wiat land, and we thank the Wiat people for welcoming us to their homeland. We acknowledge that the Wiat people are resilient and thriving, and they continue to share their stories, knowledge, and traditions with us. The Wiat people care deeply about their community and all communities. In addition to the Wiat nation, we honor and acknowledge the Yurok, Karuk, Hupa, Matol, and Wailaki indigenous nations. So we'd also like to thank our sponsors, Queer Humboldt, Humboldt Area Foundation, Wild Rivers Community Foundation, Haliyashi, Clyde Akamine Realtor, Maverick and Haywood, Hunter Hunter and Hunt, Zorgling Law Firm, Playhouse Arts, Visual Concepts, Little Japan Market, Access Humboldt, the pub at the Creamery. And we want to thank all of you for being here. Also, I'd like to thank, we have a wonderful, what I call our Obon team that works on this planning every year. If you're on the team, raise your hand. Raise your hand. Wave. Thank you. Thank you so much. And now I'd like to introduce Rinban Sakamoto. He's come to us every year. He creates church for us here. So we have our Obon Festival, and he brings such a wonderful sharing of what Obon is. So the history of our Obon Festival, do you remember when we had Swimposium on the road? It was a time that San Jose Taiko came up here, combined their drumming with a big band, and it was a way of sharing history about the Japanese incarceration during World War II. We really believe that music and dancing was a tool for survival in these incarceration camps. And it was really a time that people shared, but also it was a hard time. They lost so many things. But when we got together, a lot of people said, hey, let's do Obon. And we're like, yeah, let's do Obon. And then the pandemic happened, so we had to put that off for about 3 years. And finally, we were able to have Obon. And I'm going to ask Craig to share with you the Bon dance, Bon Odori.
Hello, everyone. I'm Craig Kurumada, and I'm going to share this. I mean, some of you heard this story before, but when Marilyn first proposed having a Bon Odori festival here, oh, Saved by the Priest. Okay, we got Rinban is here. So I just want to tell you this quick, but when they first said, oh, Craig, you know Bon dances, right? So yeah, I grew up with them. I was a kid. We did them all every year. You know a bunch of them. Yeah, sure, I can teach them. Why? And he says, well, we're going to have a Bon Odori, we're going to have a Bon festival here. And I kind of smiled, waiting for the punchline, because I thought, yeah, we're going to have all 10 Asians who are in Humboldt County come and like, you know, have a raffle. And the first year, I was one of the most skeptical people. We taught the dances. We set up a schedule. We taught the dances, and right here at the Redwood Rock Studio, right behind you in the Creamery District. And they were sort of dribbling in, and then they got more and more, and we had, by the end, we had, you know, a room full of 30 dancers learning all of these dances. And then when the festival happened, man, I couldn't believe hundreds and hundreds of people here. And it never occurred to me that everyone here in Humboldt, or anyone who comes here, not only did they have a desire to understand a little bit more about this culture, but they had connections to Japan, and they had, you know, wasn't necessarily a direct connection, but there were people who studied in Japan or had worked in Japan or had friends and relatives who had done it, and it just built upon itself, and it was a wonderful, wonderful example. And we can relate it to how the odori happens, how the dance goes. You know, we have these circles to show you, and how these circles kind of expand and build upon themselves. But it was an incredible experience, and then last year was even better, and this year, of course, will be the best ever.
Well, thank you, Craig. Thank you for giving more history, and like Craig says, you know, this is it's such a wonderful community gathering, and we thank you all for being here. And now, I'd like to introduce Rinban Sakamoto. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It's good to be back in Humboldt here at Arcata Obon Festival. When we started this, when I was asked to be a part of this a couple of years ago, I said, sure, why not? And so we came up, my wife Kathy and I, came to the first Humboldt Obon. And the reason that I was asked to come to this Obon festival is an acknowledgement by the organizers that this is really a festival that is rooted in Buddhism. Buddhism is a tradition that goes back 2,600 years ago. And there are many traditions of Buddhism, and they all flow from the experience, the enlightenment experience of Shakyamuni Buddha. But in these many traditions of Buddhism, we belong to one tradition that's called Jodo Shinshu, Honganji. And it just happened that the Taiko people, when asked if you knew a Buddhist priest to come to this Obon service, they said, oh yeah, I know. So I was invited to come up to participate in this service. The Obon service, or the Obon festival, comes from a story of a disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha who, when he lost his mother, envisioned his mother in this realm of great difficulties. And so when he asked Shakyamuni Buddha what he might do to release his mother from this place, Shakyamuni Buddha told him, go and do something for your fellow monks. Rather than say, go and study more or go and do something in your practice more, Shakyamuni Buddha's instructions were to go out into the community, and in doing so, he celebrated, this disciple, Moggallana, celebrated with his friends, the community, the other monks. And in so doing, was able to release his mother from this realm of hungry ghosts. This gathering at Obon time is often called the gathering of joy. It is to remember those who have lived before us, and also in remembering to recall the deep connection that we share with these lives. These lives, although they have come to an end, the influences that these lives have on our lives continue to be present, not just in our memory, but they affect the way that we see and engage the world. Mindful of that, we're grateful for having had the opportunity to share life with them. And in remembering, we share that same gratitude and joy with one another, coming together as community, coming together as family and friends to celebrate the life that we are all a part of, the life that we share. I'll begin this portion with a reading of Sambujo. Sambujo literally invites and welcomes the Buddhas to be present. Amida Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. We generally think of Buddha as being one Buddha somewhere, someplace. But there are infinite number of Buddhas. The last line is a line that describes Buddhas in every direction. The Ten Directions are really everywhere. So wherever you are, whatever you may be doing, there is a Buddha present. Buddha is not just one single thing. Buddha is enlightenment. Buddha is nirvana. And the presence of nirvana is in all of our lives. Buddhism begins with a very fundamental question. How do we resolve the difficulties that we cause and experience? And Buddhism suggests that these difficulties result from our tendency to see the world through our preferences, our likes and dislikes. And in doing so, we separate the world out into what I like, what I don't like, what I hold on to, what I push away. And it offers the opportunity for difficulties to arise. It's hard for us to think of our lives as being already immersed in enlightenment, but it's simply because of our inability to see things as they are. Enlightenment is not far off somewhere. It's in everything that we do. But it's also our tendency to see what I like and what I don't like that keeps us from really allowing ourselves to be immersed by enlightenment itself. So the first thing that I'll read is this Sambujo, inviting Shakyamuni Buddha, Amida Buddha, then Shakyamuni Buddha, and then the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. I'll follow that with a reading of Jusege, which expresses the intent of the Bodhisattva Dharmakara to provide a means to which all beings might be freed from the difficulties that we cause and experience. Oh. Buddhism, again, begins with a fundamental question. How do we resolve these difficulties that we cause and experience? And again, Buddhism suggests that these difficulties result from my tendency to see the world through our preferences, our likes and dislikes. It's not about being Buddhist. It's about recognizing our tendency to see things in this way. I like this, I like chocolate, you like vanilla, so you like vanilla, so you can't be human, because it's only chocolate that is allowable. And whether that chocolate, whether it's ice cream or something more profound, we entrench ourselves in the way that we see the world, and we hold that to be the view that is of greatest importance. And so we convince others, or attempt to convince others, to believe as I do. But this separation, again, is a cause of the difficulties that we experience. It's not because that person is an evil person for liking vanilla. It's just that I prefer vanilla, and that person, I prefer chocolate, and that person prefers vanilla. If we can see each other simply as human beings, then maybe we can begin to see beyond these distinctions that we create for ourselves, the view that we see of the world around us. And that we can, instead of being so stuck on chocolate or vanilla, share some Neapolitan. So I think as we gather together, as we come together for this Obon festival, again, Obon is rooted in this story of Shakyamuni Buddha's disciple, Moggallana, and how he is able to release his mother from this realm of difficulties is by going into the community, doing something for his friends and his family, doing something out in the world, not going deeper into himself, not doing more of the practice, but actually the practice being going into the community, enjoying the life that supports us all, the life that we are all a part of, and enjoying that life together. Buddhism is about compassion, Buddhism about kindness. Certainly those are the characteristics that we think about when we think about Buddhism. But these are values that we all value, that we all hold as important in our lives. And so we should go out and practice that. Do it in a way that doesn't say, I'm a compassionate person, so I'm gonna do this. But do it, just be kind, compassionate to one another. Whatever differences that we might have, we can still hold on to those differences. That's our identity, that's who we are. But we should also be able to recognize, acknowledge the humanity that we are all a part of. This Obon festival, again, rooted in this story of a disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived 2,500 years ago. And before Shakyamuni Buddha's time, there were certainly conflicts and differences that people went out and got involved in. So his understanding is not something that's new, but it's something that we need to remind ourselves of, that our tendency is to see the world through our preferences. And if we can begin to recognize the humanity that we all share, we can maybe work beyond, soften the boundaries that separate us, and work toward a community, a place, as we are doing this evening, a place in which we are all welcomed, that we all feel a part of, that we can enjoy our lives together. Thank you very much for the Humboldt Happy. It's a great name, Happy Obon. For inviting Kathy and myself to be a part of this again this year. And thank you for all of your participation in this festival. It's really wonderful to see people gather together, enjoying themselves and sharing that joy with one another. Thank you very much.
どうもありがとうございました。
tuned to KMUD Garberville, 91.1, KMUE Eureka, 88.1, KLAI Laytonville, 90.3, and in Shelter Cove at 99.5. This is the KMUD Public Affairs Hour, where we're bringing you the highlights from the Hopi Obon celebration in Arcata last weekend. We are currently listening to Humboldt Tycho.
Yes, I'm Gary, founder of Humboldt Tycho, community-based Tycho group from Humboldt County. And we've been together we started about 4.5 years ago, pre-COVID. We're inspired by San Luis Tycho that came here 2019-20 or something to do this performance, more like interactive drumming and dancing, swing podium. So they want somebody that knew how to play Tycho. And I was one of the person that kind of raised my hand. I don't know why I should go like this. By the way, I just put my hand down if you're on the radio. I put my hand down just like that. And so that's how it started. And we've been together for, like I said, and we love doing community event just like this, like an Obon. And we just love the way the crowd and the people, it just give us energy, and we try to provide that energy back to the audience. And then let's go around the circle.
My name is Chris. I've been with Humboldt Tycho for 2.5 years. I love Tycho drumming. Well, say Tycho drumming is silly because Tycho means drum, so I'd be saying drumming. So I love Tycho.
Hi, I'm Yumi, and I was also here from kind of the beginning with Gary. Yeah. And I love his energy, and I love how we're a community and we're a group and we're a family, and we bring our joy and our rhythms and our energy, and we bring it out to the community, and that's what I love doing, spreading the love to
the
community.
You did a great job of that today.
Thank you. It was fun. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Tammy. I'm one of the newer members of the Tycho group. I've been with them for about 2 years now, and I used to live in Japan with my husband, and we just love Tycho because it's a chance to kind of reconnect with, you know, Japanese community. And here's my husband.
And I'm the husband. Yeah, I'm Andrew. I've also been with Tycho for 2 years. I have a similar backstory, but yes, it felt like a good connection to Japan.
Now, my name's Deborah, and I've been playing for about 3.5 years, I think. I started pre-COVID, took a little break, and then I was like, it was calling me. I could not do it. I love it. I love drumming. I love Tycho. I love the community, seeing everybody every week when we rehearse. And it's just a fantastic time. And it's really fun to play for something like the Obon Festival, where everybody is so gracious. And the audience is just the best. I just love it. Yeah.
What is Tycho?
Tycho. Tycho is it's a Japanese drumming art form. Like Chris was saying, Tycho literally means drum or big drum in Japanese, right? Yeah. But the form of Tycho that we're playing, usually traditionally you hear it like in the olden day, right, the farmer would use it to ward off evil spirit for good harvesting. And then you, in the temple, they do kind of like a festival, a ritual ceremony. That was original how taiko was started. And, you know, you go back all the way to ancient feudal Japan where they used as warfare, they used drum as, you know, like, attack, attack. Go back. Go back. I'm just making that up. I don't know what that is, but they use that for warfare. So, but the modern day, the way what we're doing here is called komi daiko. It's just a more ensemble where you have lots. You know, you have shimi daiko, you have odaiko. Well, we just put it away. A lot of instruments that come together to play to be a big ensemble.
More performance based,
yeah, more entertainment. So we also want to ward off evil spirit while we're doing it.
And so taiko here, Humboldt Taiko, seems extremely inclusive. And like, how did you all find each other and create such a stellar group of folks?
I myself met somebody in a dance class, and I was told them that I was in the samba performance, and she said she played taiko since she was a little girl. I said I knew who the taiko group was. She said it didn't exist. And so then we went and watched them perform, and then they said, why don't you come next week?
It's one of those spur of the moment. I know Chris, you know, we were doing African drumming. So it's more like networking and how, you know, your passion, you follow that passion and you kind of find it somehow. So that's, I think. But I don't know what the other people.
I'd like to speak up because myself and Yumi and Barbara, we all did African dance for like 30 years here. And so it was just like an extension of that, and also drumming, we've drummed. And so,
shout out to the African dance community.
Yeah, they're really great. And so anyway, for me, it was an extension of that and trying something new. And having played rhythms and so forth, it was like, I mean, it's so fabulous. And I love that we perform a lot. You know, it was like maybe one gig a year in the other groups. And this is like, you just continue to grow and get better. And that's what's super fun to see, too. And we celebrate each other getting better and better. Yeah. It's really just so inclusive.
Yeah, you know, you kind of touched on it, but how is Humboldt Taiko maybe different than a traditional taiko or other taiko groups?
Humboldt Taiko.
So, there are so many wherever you go.
And my sister has been doing taiko for over 20 years. Down in Seaside, and her taiko group is very traditional. Her teacher's from Japan. She writes her own music, and they bow when they come into the room. It's like a martial art. It's very serious. My sister's afraid, you know, if the teacher's nearby, I'm gonna, you know, correct her. But we have it's different, and they have a different idea, and they have beautiful music. She writes all her own music, and it's over 30 people,
So we're ours just a baby, really. Yeah. We're just a baby compared to other. I mean, there are art, you know, taiko community. If we want a new song or something, we would go and then I'm sure you know, ask around. I used to play taiko in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Emeryville Taiko. So, and then like I said, San Jose Taiko, they've been very supportive. You know, they came and taught us some songs and basic move and basic skill. I don't know. I mean, I've been, like you were saying, there's, you know, our style is a little bit more, I say, flexible. It's not strict.
It's inclusive.
Yes. It's really inclusive. And very playful, and we like to have fun, you know.
Yeah, I've definitely seen, like my friend, who her group that she used to perform with in L.A., very much more of the strict kind, very formal. You perform this way, and we're definitely more loose with that. Which is a lot of fun. And San Jose Taiko was like the second established taiko group in America. I think they were established in 1973. That's only 50 years. And there's been a lot of taiko groups that have cropped up in the last decade or two. And they're very much more fun. They were part of who brought up the Swingposium. And so they have a lot of fun with their music and dance with it.
And they also mix in a lot of, you know, African music, samba, so more an additional, rather more just, traditional music, which is nice too. That's how, you know, you got to start somewhere, right? For for us, yeah, it just, because a lot of mixture of us have different skill, a level. So we just have to just work what we have, basically, and just try and, you know, like, enjoy each other and have fun.
And I guess my final question would be, where do you find your inspiration? And what message are you trying to use that to channel when you're playing?
Wow, that's too deep of a question. Channel my spirit. Oh, I'm trying to channel my spirit right now to answer that question.
Well, I can answer.
Yeah, go ahead.
I am a very, like, serious person in my, you know, day-to-day life. I'm a teacher, and I came after a really busy time to one of our performances at Friday Night Market, and Gary said, okay, let's all put our hands in a circle and let's have fun. And I was just like, oh, that's so refreshing to just be focused on having fun. And I think the sense of community, we really have a sense of family with one another. We do, you know, birthday celebrations together. And I think it's just this feeling of community, of fun, of inclusivity, and joy. Yeah.
Yes. Indeed. Yes. We're very much love like that. A family. I love this group.
Personally, for myself, whenever we do a performance, I try to bring in somebody in my mind that I want to honor, and a lot of them are my ancestors, like my mom or somebody who recently died, and I bring their energy in when I play.
What final message do you want the K-Mud Nation to know?
Wow, K-Mud Nation.
We love to be part of the community, and we really love to come to your festivities.
Okay. Whenever you're ready, introduce yourself and share a little bit about the work, the great work you've been doing in our community.
All right. My name is Sherry Wu, and I'm a member of HAPI, and that's the Humboldt Asian Pacific Islanders in Solidarity. We have been doing a number of things. First of all, I'll talk about HAPI. It's a group of Asian Americans. We kind of found each other through this thing called Humboldt Swing Taiko, and it was right before COVID when, I don't know if you remember, this all came together. It was a combination of, they call it immersive theater, and it was about the concentration camps, being in the camps, but also kind of combining that with swing dancing, swing music, and taiko drumming. So it was a good way for people to learn about what life in the camps was like. So that's kind of how HAPI started. And since then, we've had a number of projects. One of them, like you're hearing in the background here, is the Obon Festival, which is kind of a festival to revere your ancestors and just kind of celebrate life. So we also do the Eureka Street Festival. And that street festival is part of something else called the Eureka Chinatown Project. So the Eureka Chinatown Project was kind of kicked off by a couple of us within the Eureka Chinatown Project. There's been a number of, like, almost mini projects or mini tasks within it. So there's the tours that we give about the historical Chinatown, just telling people that there was a Chinatown in Eureka, and to, like, not forget that it was there, not forget that during a time when there was a lot of uncertainty, unrest, people just not feeling comfortable, kind of like today, people looking for a scapegoat. And so that's what happened with the Chinese people, and they were kicked out in 1885. So that's kind of the story behind, that's the impetus behind the project. So we've done the Chinatown tours, the mural, which is on EF 4th and 5th, and we renamed Charlie Moon Way, and now the other big project we're doing is called the Monument. So we're trying to set up a monument at 1st and E Street in Eureka. The city's been great. They're so supportive.
Before we talk about that project, I'm wondering, you know, you kind of mentioned that everything came together through art and dance, which were portraying a very oppressive time for Japanese Americans. It started there. How did it develop into HAPI and the Chinatown Project? And how were you able to bring back some of this culture where a lot of the stuff we've been taught in Humboldt County has been so whitewashed?
Yeah, right. That's such a great question. The first one, I'll kind of hit on this combination of the arts, whether it's sculpture or dance or music, and folding that into history. And because it's an ugly history, and, you know, nobody wants to dwell on it, but yet we do want it to have people know about it. So a really great way to get people to try to make this a little more palatable is through art and music and poetry and dance. So that is kind of, I mean, like I was saying, Humboldt Swing Taiko was all of that. There was a story, but it's encased in a lot of the arts. And so the monument's the same way. Yeah.
You know, like I was kind of mentioning, you know, Charlie Moon, learning about his story, I mean, it was just so powerful, but it's a story not, you know, I don't think was really talked about until this project started happening. How were you all able to bring his history and Asian American history back to Humboldt?
It's such a great story because, you know, the original narrative that I kind of knew about when I moved up to Humboldt was, hey, everybody, all the Chinese people were kicked out of Humboldt except for Charlie Moon. And quote unquote, Charlie Moon was the only Chinese man left in Humboldt County. So this is a story, but it's not, I mean, that part is true, but there's so much more to it that makes it a better story. So the other parts of the story was that, no, he wasn't the only person left. There were others. But the other part of it that's great is he married a Native woman, and they had a number of children. And those children obviously had children throughout the generations. And so as we're starting this project and learning more and more about it, and who is Charlie Moon, and, hey, there are a lot of Moon descendants here. Let's talk to them. So now we have the tribe who is interested in the Chinatown project. And so when we renamed that Charlie Moon Way, that, you know, we really got in touch with them. The thing that was super great was for the other more simple narrative was there's no Chinese people in Humboldt County for 70 years. And that's not true because the Moon family, they were here and they're, you know, part Chinese. Yeah.
And so you're saying there's a lot of solidarity with the tribe right now. I believe he married a Hupa woman.
Cholula, part of the Hupa tribe.
Here today we saw Centro del Pueblo, yep. Queer Humboldt.
Yes.
Can you just speak to like how there's a lot of solidarity happening with this movement?
There is, because, you know, Hopi is actually, the full name is Humboldt Asian Pacific Islanders in Solidarity. And that in solidarity part often gets left out, you know, because it's not catchy. I don't know why. Because Hopi Hour is funny, you know? Like, okay, fine. But yes, the solidarity part is a big part of it. Partially just numbers. I mean, right now, I think there's about 3% of Humboldt County is Asian. 7% is Native American. I don't really have the numbers on queer Humboldt or black Humboldt, but we do tend to try to do stuff together because of the numbers, you know?
The first time I ever saw Taiko drumming was with Sudo for Solidarity at an ICE internment camp.
Yeah, okay.
And how they were talking about the parallels, and I just thought there's so much solidarity like in this movement. Mm-hmm. And do you see parallels today that we can learn from our Asian American community members to make our country and world a better place?
For sure. So one of the things so we've been giving these historical Chinatown tours to the high schoolers, and we've been doing it for a couple years now, and that's kind of a thing that I would really like is for it just to become part of the curriculum. So it's just something that everybody knows, you know. You just common knowledge, you know. What you're saying about what can we learn about it. When that exclusion, that whole driven out thing happened, it was during a time of high income inequality, kind of like the Belle Epoque and all that. It's February in Humboldt County. The outdoor jobs are shut down, right? There's no logging, there's no construction and all that because it's raining. So it's the winter time. So again, you know, there's high unemployment, it's raining, it's gray. There's a lot of scapegoating going on, again, because it's income inequality. Everybody's looking for somebody to blame. And it's kind of similar to what's happening now.
So. I was really moved by the gentleman that spoke about Buddhism earlier and how he was explaining to see those differences. So could that be a lesson you would encourage others, you know, regardless of their religion or race, to look into?
Oh, for sure. And even among us Asian people. So Asian American, it is such a huge block, you know? I mean, there's even in Humboldt, you know, there's the Lao community, the Hmong community. Even I feel sometimes different of the Chinese Americans because I'm fifth generation. So, like, my mother doesn't even speak Chinese. I don't speak Chinese. You know, I'm very Americanized. So even with other Chinese Americans, we're all different.
Do you ever, are you ever like, I'm American, you know? Like, for me, I'm not an Irish American, you know? Like, how do you process that, and what do you personally identify as?
In context. Right. I think it's totally in context. Like, sometimes I'll feel like I want to, it's important for me to identify as Chinese American or Asian American, and sometimes not so much. It's all like kind of the context.
And you've been absolutely critical in bringing a lot of this history to Humboldt County.
This is totally a group effort. And what's been always so fun, back up a little bit. I'm an engineer, okay? Like, what do I know about art, right? I don't know, anyway.
It's an art form.
Sort of. But we have a number of historians who are on the group, and they are so fun. I mean, they will just dig into microfiche or microfilm, and it's pretty cool. The email chains that happen in this group are amazing. You know, it's like Alex Service is one of the historians. He's local. And, you know, she'll just kind of, hey, guys, I was in the microfilm, and I found blah, 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 and it's attached. And she's actually, so kind of back up there, after the Chinese people were expelled, they all ended up in San Francisco because that's where the boats just like dropped them off. And about, I guess within a year, there was actually a lawsuit that they wrote up against the city of Eureka because they lost everything, you know, their farms, their businesses, their possessions, everything, they had to leave here. So it was, we think, perhaps the first reparations lawsuit of its kind in the U.S. So what Alex is doing is she is going through the names that were on the lawsuit, and she's cross-referencing that with the names of the business owners in Eureka, trying to find the names, and she's even kind of cross-referenced that with the school rolls to see the children, because there's also this common thing about, oh, it was just men and there was no children or women, or if the women here were prostitutes, it's like, right? But there were actually children here. And so she's making these lines between making actual people, you know? So yeah, the historians here are just amazing. Yeah, super fun.
And, you know, now with Charlie Moon Way, with the murals, and there's actually gonna be a very special memorial site coming up. Can you talk about that and how that was envisioned?
Sure. So there is, amazingly enough, art can happen by committee because it's a very powerful design, and it was by committee. So first of all, I'll describe what it kind of is as best I can without a graphic. This is all with words. So it's on the corner of 1st and East Street, which is kitty corner from the new Dick Taylor. Cross from Health Sport?
Yes.
Okay. And so there's a couple of elements to it. One is called, it's a river timeline that's going to be in the concrete, kind of maybe tile or maybe bluish textured concrete. And that river timeline has markers on it. And the markers are sized to represent the populations of Asian peoples in Humboldt County. So it starts in like the 1850s, say. And there's more and more, the markers get bigger. And then in 1885, there's just none. So the markers go to ground level. And they stay like that for 70 years. And then slowly it starts building up again. So that's part of it. There's poetry boards along the edges. So a local poet named Daryl Chin, he wrote a poem called How Do We Talk Without Words? And then there's the other part of it is a moon gate. And that's a kind of a typical or something that you would find in Asian landscape architecture, this moon gate. So we're going, oh yeah, moon gate, that'll be great. And then we went, oh my God, it's a moon gate, you know? The Moon family, duh, you know. So it was super fun to have that.
When are you hoping to have this constructed, and how can the greater community support this effort?
You know, the community has already been super great about supporting. I've been giving this talk to any number of Rotary, Kiwanis, and Chamber, you know. So, and everybody's super supportive about the city of Eureka. Can't say enough good things about them, both the council, past and present, and staff as well. City staff has been great. So we are about two-thirds of the way with, we think, construction funding. The city will probably, we hope, put it out to bid in maybe December or January, so January 2025. And then hopefully construction takes about 2 months maybe. And then what we really, really want to do is have an opening ceremony in May 2025. Because that'll coincide with the next street festival. That's the goal. That's what we hope. Yeah.
And this has just been all so incredible. You know, how do you imagine the next 5 to 10 years looking like for Hopi?
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. I mean, there's just going to be more and more of this. You know, it's a cumulative effect. So, you know, every tour we do, every talk we do, every time somebody comes to the monument, every time, you know, it's just like little by little by little. So I think it's getting better. We do talk with the students at CR and Cal Poly. And some of the students, the Asian students here, feel pretty isolated. They're, you know, this is very white compared to the communities they're coming from. So it's one thing to just be rare, but it's entirely different thing to feel fear. And so we don't want that. And I have heard some of that, you know. So we're going to try to, you know, just by having people understand, then maybe some of that fear factor will decrease.
On this topic, when, you know, COVID happened, we saw a rise in hate crimes towards our Asian community members. You know, Queer Humble, for instance, they have a reporting tool for hate against queer individuals. If a member of our Asian community has experienced racism or even worse, physical violence, is there a place, like, can they contact Hopi? Is that an element of Hopi?
Oh, for sure. And not just Hopi, but the people that, if not like, you know, the few of us who are the actual steering committee, it's the people who are members of Hopi. A really good example would be one of the professors on campus, and exactly that happened, you know, where a student was moving into the dorms, and the father of another student said to him, "Oh, I didn't know they were letting Asians in," or something really lame, you know? And was he trying to be funny? Was he trying to, I don't know. We don't know, right? But it upset the student. Whatever it was, it did upset the student. And he felt safe enough to go to his professor. And then the professor was telling us about this thing. Yeah.
And today we're seeing so many different folks here, folks maybe not a part of the Hopi community, but they're here. Are you hoping, like, seeing all these young kids, everyone just playing together, that this is like that step towards eradicating hate?
We can hope, right? I mean, and you're right. I mean, there's a few good things that came out of COVID, right? Anti-Asian hate was not one of them, but the response to anti-Asian hate has been good. You know, like you're saying, that people are collecting more data. We have more data about it. And yeah, so there, I mean, there's been some good parts to it. Yeah.
What else should folks know? What did I miss?
HopiHumboldt.org, that's the website. And there's any number of ways that you can support. You know, one is just to listen to the show, you know, get the message out, tell somebody else. Money is always a good thing. And on the HopiHumboldt.org website, you can donate to the monument, you can donate to Taiko Drumming, you can donate to, I think there's a couple different things there.
Yeah, anything else you want to leave the listeners with?
No, I think you've done. Thank you for talking with us and creating these little shows. Thank you.
So we're here at Hopi, and I'd love to know how you feel about today and what brought you out and what you stand for.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess this event is like really cool. This is my second Hopi event as a vendor, and I just stand for peace and solidarity in all communities, and especially in community that I'm so a part of. It's cool to come out and like be with the people. Yeah, it's really cool.
Thank you.
You want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really awesome to be able to like come to community events like this again, and like everyone's super friendly and happy just like be out and doing stuff. So yeah, yeah. It's really fun.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate you all so much. So I call myself Wild Ginger on the radio. It's nice to meet you.
I'm Lexi with Black Humboldt.
Thanks for being here, Lexi. What are you enjoying about today's event?
I'm just enjoying seeing everyone come together and like all the different booths. It's like sometimes when you do the tabling, you always see the same groups. And so to see all these different people this time, it's great and lovely.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. Really appreciate it. And is there any events coming up with your group that we could promote for you?
Yeah, we have our back to school block party on the 24th from 1 to 5 at Septentrio. We'll be giving away school supplies, have a DJ playing, and be giving away some haircuts and some braiding.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Say the date one more time.
The 24th.
Awesome. Yay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you want to start by introducing yourself, and we'll go from there.
I'm Amy Hachimonji.
I'm Jim Hachimonji.
I really like Obon. It's really fun to see everybody dancing, and that's my favorite part. And I think to celebrate in a little bit, when they have the second session of dancing, I'll go and dance. And then I'm also volunteering at the Tanzaku Station, which is like slips of paper that you can write messages to your ancestors on or wishes you have, and then we'll hang them on this tree and they'll be burned later tonight.
Yes, I'm happy to volunteer because I just love this event for our community. And my son got to sing a song earlier, Japanese folk song, so this whole event is just a joyful event.
When did you all first get involved with Hopi?
3 years ago.
The first of all.
Because, you know, there's a lot of these festivals in Southern California. I've lived up here since I was, 18, but every time in the summer when I'd go see my parents in the Los Angeles area, there would be Obon festivals happening around. And my mom would do the dancing, and she's passed away now, so it kind of means more to me. This is this ancestor festival.
Would you both feel comfortable sharing what message you put on the tree?
Sure. I wrote to my grandma and grandpa that I hope they're like happy and doing well. And then I also wrote that I hope everybody in my community and family and friends stays healthy.
That's so sweet.
And I just... It was more powerful than I realized because I hadn't done this before, but to write my parents a little note was, I just told them how much I missed them, and I thought they would be really happy to see their grandkids.
What message do you want to tell the greater public?
I think just come together and like celebrate each other's cultures and have fun.
Well, I'm really grateful to Happy and the organizers of Happy, and I really, want to. If people want to come to the Obon Festival, I think that would be a great thing, and share. We can all share from each other's cultures and stuff, and that makes California a really cool place.
Absolutely. Marilyn, yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We are closing this 2024 Obon Festival. Mm-hmm. How was today?
So many more people again. I think we're close to 3,000 this year. The joy and families coming, dancing, and just enjoying the music. It's been wonderful.
You know, being a part of Hopi and all these other critical things that are really bringing history back to life, mm-hmm. and to see this event come to fruition, like, how are you feeling?
Oh, I feel really good, really good. And just grateful to everyone, especially our Obon team. You know, it's like people from all different backgrounds just coming together because they grew up with something tied to Obon, and they said that I want to do this and I want to do that. So it's been a great group of people working together. Yeah.
What can we expect, into the future? Are we going to continue to have this awesome festival?
I think so. I really think people look forward to it. We learn from, like, okay, seating, how did that go, this and that, placement of things. And I think having, like, the children's activities, so it's very family-focused and everything about it. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, how did you see the spirit of Obon come to life today?
I could just feel people honoring their ancestors. I met people who had just recently lost someone, so it was a time of remembrance and time of just to honor that. And I saw people at the ancestors' tree and just writing notes. So I feel like they're in the spirit of it all, but also the dancing together. It's really bringing community together, and that's what I love about this. Yeah.
It's been beautiful. And yeah. Marilyn, anything else people should know?
Look forward to next year.
Those were the highlights from Hopi's third annual Obon Festival in Arcata. As we reflect on this meaningful event, it's clear that Hopi is doing more than just celebrating tradition. They are actively preserving and honoring the rich cultural heritage of Humboldt County. Through their dedication to community projects like the Eureka Chinatown Project and their efforts to amplify diverse voices, Hopi is fostering a deeper understanding and appreciation of our shared history. We at KMUD News are grateful to have been a part of this year's Obon Festival and look forward to continuing to support Hopi's mission of building a more inclusive and engaged community. I've been your host, Lauren Schmidt.